This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes, Jack McKenna speaking. It's Tuesday, December 5th, 1950. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news. Harriet has local Christmas things coming up. And the labor guy is in to talk about something laborious.
You're not doing a lot of preparation for the show these days, are you?
Yes, I do. I've got a surprise. I think it'll jazz things up a bit.
Uh-oh.
I just know it'll be good, Lou. Just like your news. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Millardburg Photography. They have the Brownie Hawkeye flash outfit for just $12.75. Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. The Chinese have entered Pyongyang while President Truman declares that the fight for freedom will go on. And it's here. The first oil arrives from Canada to Superior. We begin our World Shortwave Radio report from Seoul.
Hello, this is Max Jordan, north of Seoul, with retreating Allied troops. The big red Chinese army is entering abandoned Pyongyang today on a momentous face-saving mission for Soviet-sponsored communism in the Orient. United Nations forces representing 53 non-communist countries had driven the broken and fleeing Red Korean Army from their Pyongyang capital on October 20th. Before overwhelming pressure from vanguards of the 1 million-man Chinese Communist Army, the last United Nations troops pulled out of Pyongyang in retreat to the south. The Chinese liberators found the Red Capital a flaming, smoking city, ravaged of installations and supplies that might be of military advantage. The Red return is certain to be hailed throughout the communist world. First reports of Pyongyang's return to Red control came from late arrivals among the Korean refugees swarming south of the city. They said Chinese troops forded the icy Taedong River that cuts through a section of Pyongyang. The one-time city of 300,000 is something of an empty prize. Thousands of Koreans have fled in terror of the Red return. Allied rear guards left the city early today after blasting the last bridges on the Taedong. Protected by a rear guard shield of British and South Korean troops south of Pyongyang, overwhelmed Allied troop columns beat a war-weary retreat toward the South Korean capital of Seoul. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan.
This is Seoul. Correspondent O.H.P. King here. Would the Allies stand and defend against onrushing Chinese masses? A stand might even be made here. Quoting a veteran military observer, even in the face of a million Chinese communists, the Seoul Incheon area can be held. Such heavy losses could be inflicted on the enemy by artillery and air that his hope of sweeping the peninsula would be smashed, unquote. Masses of Chinese Reds, striking as the shock troops of more than 1 million, General MacArthur says, have been committed to the Korean War, turned the tide. In the northeast, Marines and Doughboys fight to break out of the Red Chinese trap south of Tianjin Reservoir. Chinese masses mounted twin drives to cut off the entire 10th Corps of 3 American and 2 South Korean divisions. The most threatening of these is aimed at Hamhung. Chinese attacked at nightfall against U.S. 3rd Division troops near Sinpung, 15 air miles west of the big industrial city. On the northwest front, there is no major contact reported with the Chinese. The 8th Army retreat on wheels was too fast for the foot-slogging Chinese. In Seoul, this is OHP King.
This is Washington. Jack Bell reporting. President Truman says United Nations forces in Korea are fighting against tremendous odds. But he declared today that no matter what happens there, the fight for freedom will go on. His somber-toned report came amid growing talk in Congress and elsewhere that the UN military situation has begun to appear almost hopeless and may force a Dunkirk-type withdrawal by sea. Mr. Truman took time out from an almost continual round of conferences with American military advisers and British Prime Minister Clement Attlee to address the White House Conference of Children and Youth. He stressed the precarious situation in Korea and the grave risk of a general war. He says the nature of the present crisis is only part of the long-range struggle to uphold the values of peace and justice and freedom. There, some of the best-informed officials are saying it's still too early to predict what will actually happen or that the UN forces will have to get out of Korea entirely. Mr. Truman and Prime Minister Attlee reviewed the situation yesterday with Joint Chiefs of Staff Chairman Omar Bradley. General Bradley is reported to have told them that evacuation plans are ready if they have to be used. The president says intervention of Chinese communists in Korea has greatly changed the situation. Then, in a sentence interpreted by some as his first move to prepare the country for bad news, news of a military disaster in Korea, the president added, quote, "No matter how the immediate situation develops, we must remember that the fighting in Korea is but one part of the tremendous struggle of our time, the struggle between freedom and communist imperialism." In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is AP Foreign Affairs Analyst DeWitt McKenzie in the nation's capital. There is an ugly sound to that cynical phrase, "they are expendable," as applied to billions of red Chinese fighting men. To Western ears, it is particularly ugly when used to designate the horde of Chinese who are pouring down on the comparatively small United Nations force in Korea. It means, of course, that these Chinese are available for cannon fodder. No questions asked. General MacArthur said Monday that more than 810,000 Red troops are massed in North Korea and neighboring Manchuria. 200,000 are en route to the battle zone. 3 million more are under arms in China. Against this multitude is an Allied force estimated at 200,000. And what makes these men expendable? It's true that many Oriental people regard death with a stoicism which the West finds hard to understand. Chinese nationalist sources in Formosa who have been through the war will tell me the Red soldier is forced into the ranks and kept there by threats of harm to his family. Sometimes before an attack, nationalist sources say the troops are given narcotics or are intoxicated. A recent report from Korea tells of a fierce attack by drunken Chinese Reds. In Washington, DeWitt McKenzie reporting.
This is Drew Pearson with the Washington Merry-Go-Round. It was partly a fluke that led to the Attlee-Truman Conference, one of the most important since Potsdam. Regardless, diplomats agree that the conversation has long been needed to bring greater synchronization of traditional British-American friendship. The fluke was the president's off-the-cuff statement that we were considering dropping the atomic bomb and the inference that General MacArthur had been given a free hand as to when we should drop it. This statement left the British House of Commons and British labor leaders gasping. They have had increasing misgivings about MacArthur and are fully aware of the manner in which he had maneuvered around the State Department to keep UN armies away from the Manchurian border. Simultaneously came a speech by Anthony Eden demanding conferences between London and Washington, plus a London Daily Mail editorial goading Attlee with the taunt that Churchill would have been halfway across the Atlantic were he prime minister. Adding to his comment about dropping the A-bomb, about 100 conservative members of parliament left the chamber and signed a petition to Churchill stating that if the United States drops the bomb, Britain should pull out of Korea. Note: 3 hours after the first Truman statement on the A-bomb came a clarifying White House statement that under the law, only the president can authorize the use of the atomic bomb and that no authorization had been given to MacArthur. In Washington, this is columnist Drew Pearson.
The Soviet bloc nation of Czechoslovakia has imprisoned 8 Catholic Church officials and 1 bishop, convicting them of espionage and high treason for the Vatican. Bishop Stanislav Zala has been sentenced to 25 years in prison. 12 Atlantic Power Pact countries will meet tomorrow to thresh out final details of a Dutch proposal to use West German troops for Western Europe's defense. The French have balked at rearming the former Reich, but now say that they will go along with the proposal, citing the threat of the Soviet Union. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this message from our sponsor.
Indeed I have, Lou. From Miller Burgs at 1509 Tower Avenue, folks. You bet your sweet life we have that exciting new Brownie Hawkeye flash outfit. $12.75, that's all it costs. All in one kit. Everything needed to make splendid flash shots indoors. Crisp, clear snapshots outdoors. Features the Brownie Hawkeye camera flash model. For just $12.75, are they kidding? It's worth a lot more than that. And there are other Kodak gift cameras, too, folks. Like the Kodak DuoFlex 11 camera. Capable new twins lens reflex. Ah, lots of goodies in that camera, folks. For just $21.95. Millard Burgs, where it pays to go for your flash cameras. Indeed. Lou?
The first oil has made its way to Superior. KUWS radio newsman Mike Simonson has this historic moment for us. Good evening, Mike.
Good evening, Lou. You can't trust oil, and it doesn't have any manners either. Officials of the Lakehead Pipeline Company had expected the first black gold from the fabulous Alberta wells to reach Superior Tuesday at 4 a.m. Despite the early morning hour, city and county officials had planned a party heralding its debut, but something happened. The oil, acting like a prima donna, pulled a quickie and poked its black snoot into the Superior Terminal at 9:15 last night, 7 hours ahead of the predicted arrival. The welcoming party was ruined. Only the unimpressed workmen were there, accepting the oil flow as part of their job. The arrival does mean the new industrial era is here. Superior is now an oil city. Secretary of the New Industries Bureau, Olaf Johnson, says, "We believe this is a great day for Superior. The Lakehead Pipeline Company has established an industry in Superior, which will undoubtedly open a field for the much-needed industrial activity here in Superior," end quote. The flow of Canadian oil into Superior impressed Lou Schneider, the Telegram's national economic columnist, who says, quote, "There will come a day when Superior, Wisconsin will be the nation's largest oil center. The oil from the vast Canadian pools will be pumped into it for Great Lakes shipping," end quote, Lou.
Thanks, Mike. The steamer Benson Ford, now loading at the Northern Pacific ore docks, is expected to leave sometime tomorrow morning with the last load of ore, which will close the 1950 season for the NP and the Soo Line. The Great Northern Railroad will send its final load of ore on the E.T. Weir, which is scheduled to arrive tomorrow afternoon and depart Thursday morning. The Marine Service Office reports that 18 boats were in the harbor today. Shipping has been slowed down to a minimum by 6 to 18 inches of ice in the harbor. While some boats prepare to leave the harbor, others scheduled to take on ore arrived in Superior and Duluth, and they'll tie up for the winter. Tying up in Superior at the Knutson Brothers Shipbuilding and Dry Dock Company are the W.E. Corey, the E.J. Buffington. Already docked are the L.C. Smith, the Harvester, F.B. Morse, and the D.O. Mills. United States Ambassador to Canada, Stanley Woodward, says his government recognizes the urgency of the St. Lawrence Waterway Project and plans to press for its adoption by Congress in 1951. In an address prepared for delivery before the joint meeting of the Canadian and Empire Clubs, he says that he has discussed the project with President Truman in Washington. Quoting Ambassador Woodward, "I told him how much Canada wants to see us start the project." Mr. Truman replied, "So do we. It's an urgent matter, and I intend to press it at the next session of Congress." Cathedral High School students and their art teacher, Mrs. Charles Podman, are displaying a Christmas scene in the window of the Superior Water, Light, and Power Company. Mrs. Podman says that they hope to get people to buy more Christmas seals to help pay for the mobile X-ray used to detect tuberculosis. Cathedral Principal Sister Ancella allowed students Harry Sarzan, Rosemary Gale, and Andrew Ostaszewski to take time off from class to put the display together. And Jack, the annual presentation of the Nativity will be given Sunday evening in Ashland. Drama instructor Kenneth Abrahamson and director Miss Evelyn Rundquist present the high school program featuring No Room at the Inn to Herod and the Wise Men and the Adoration Scene.
Do you think they'll be handing out candy canes? I love candy canes at Christmas events.
I don't think Mrs. Rundquist or anyone else will want the sound of people sucking on candy canes during the nativity scene.
But I'm not a loud sucker.
That could be debated.
As W.C. Fields once said, there's one born every minute. Thanks, Lou. Here's our bundle-up forecast for this Tuesday night, December 5th, 1950. Clearing and much, 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 much colder, folks. Tonight's low will drop to 18 below. And with fair skies tomorrow, the high, might get up to zero. No snow, anyway. At least you don't have to shovel cold. It's music time. Here's one from 1946. This is Tommy Dorsey and his orchestra and the Hucklebuck, with Charlie Shavers on the Martin and McKenna Clear Skies Show. And his orchestra and the Hucklebuck. One of the last big tunes before they broke up. Now this message from Edelstein's Furniture and China. Edelstein's has 101 ways to give your table the holiday new look. You can have a different sparkling crystal centerpiece for table beauty every day of the year. It's easy with Cambridge Arms. Made of genuine Cambridge crystal. Included is the distinctive candle holder, and there's no price given. Which probably means it's kind of expensive. Edelstein's Furniture and China, 1521 Tower Avenue in Superior.
What on earth was that?
It's my new thing to jazz up our program. Don't you think it adds a little drama?
To an Edelstein ad?
Well, I haven't found anything dramatic to use the music unless you let me use it during your news. General MacArthur has a special announcement.
Don't even think about it.
But I need something dramatic, Lou. How about dramatic organ music? Artie Shaw and Dancing in the Dark on the Martin and McKenna Show. Don't get annoyed, Lou.
I'm way past annoyed.
Thank you.
Artie Shaw and his magnificent clarinet, Dancing in the Dark, on station KUWS.
Let me introduce labor editor Jay Fisher. Stop doing that.
That's okay. It kind of jazzes up the show. Gives it a flair, if you knows what I'm saying. And I'm here to tell you, Jack is a big favorite down at the Labor Temple. I mean, after all those broken toys he donated to the city firemen to repair for those needy kids this Christmas, wow.
Don't.
I'm here to give my union brothers and sisters a piece of my mind. It's cold tonight, and holy mackerel, Jack's forecast says it's going to get colder than a boss on payday.
Well, at least we're not going to get a snowstorm.
But even on the balmiest of evenings, union delegates aren't turning out for their meetings at the labor hall. I'm here to tell you that this is the type of meeting the workers in Russia would give plenty to be able to attend. But they can't. You can. And union presidents check on your delegates to make sure they attend a Superior Federation of Labor meetings. This is your chance to be heard. Democracy in action.
And I hear you have great donuts, too.
That's right. Free donuts and coffee. Now listen up and get a pencil ready, because here's the dope on the meeting times. Tuesday night, firefighters, Boilermakers 117, and Ladies Auxiliary have meetings. Wednesday nights, it's Grain Millers 113, the Scandinavian Sisters of America, and the hotel and restaurant workers. Funny, those grain millers always meet the same night the Scandinavian Sisters get together.
Those grain millers are shameless.
Thursday nights, the creamery workers and the theatrical projectionists and stagehands meet. So come one, come all, but be there. See us.
Superior Federation of Labor editor Jay Fisher.
The Labor Guy. Here's one from 1945. This is Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and At Last, on the Martin and McKenna Wish We Met on Wednesday Night show.
Glenn Miller and his orchestra, and At Last, with Ray Eberle on the vocal, on KUWS.
It's time for the lovely Harriet Feirig and the community news. Good evening, Harriet.
Thank you, Lewis. Jack, get that dramatic organ music ready and play it. I have a very, very important announcement. Something that was just brought to my attention.
But it irritates Lou.
Does not. I do not get irritated by such trivial balderdash.
I see.
I've just been told that Husky, a former member of the K-9 Corps, has gone AWOL. I just got an urgent call. Yes, thank you, Jack. I just got an urgent call from Mr. Randall Buckley of Banks Avenue. He says his 4-year-old daughter Linda's pet disappeared Sunday night.
And it's going to get so cold.
I'll call the Labor Temple. We got guys out all over town. We'll get the word out.
Thank you, Jay. This is a special animal, boys. Husky served in the Coast Guard as a guard dog from 1942 to the end of the war. He was on the West Coast and then the Marshall Islands in the Pacific Campaign. Needless to say, little Linda is heartbroken.
Do you have a description?
She's 4 years old, a girl, and answers to Linda.
I mean Husky, the dog.
Well, he's got a black, wet nose, pointy ears, barks, is hairy, and comes running if you say Husky or Num-Nums.
All dogs answer to Num-Nums.
And some people, too. We've got the word out, Harriet.
Good. I know we'll find Husky for you, Linda. Handel's famous oratorio, The Messiah, will be presented tonight at the Superior State College. The performance will be given in the college gymnasium.
The basketball hoops help the acoustics.
Jack! The choral director is Donald Foltz, and the organist will be Lucille Hemmel-Webb.
Now stop that, or Harriet will never finish.
I'm sorry, Lewis. Am I boring you?
I'll go over by the phones in case somebody calls about the dog.
The children at the Superior Children's Home are practicing their Christmas songs and recitations. They'll have their annual Christmas party December 27th. The gala holiday event at the home is one of the highlights of the season. The board of the Children's Home and Refuge Association graciously sponsors this party for the community and the children. There'll be a glimmering Christmas tree. Santa Claus will hand out gifts and candy, and in return, the children will put on a Christmas program. It's wonderful.
Community editor Miss Harriet Feirig. I didn't mean anything by that remark, you know.
I know, Lewis. It's just... Well, I can't get my mind off little Linda and Husky in that cold, cold weather Jack says is coming.
At least it won't snow. You'd never find Husky in the snow. Time for one more number, though, just for you folks. This is Johnny Mercer and Accentuate the Positive. I can't sound like him on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Gather round me, everybody. Gather round me while I preach some. Feel a sermon coming on me. The topic will be sin, and that's what I'm again. If you wanna hear my story, then settle back and just sit tight while I start reviewing the attitude of doing right. You got to accentuate the positive, eliminate the negative, and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In-Between. You got to spread joy up to the maximum. Bring gloom down to the minimum. Have faith or pandemonium, liable to walk upon the scene. To illustrate my last remark, Jonah in the whale, Noah in the ark. What did they do? Just
You got to accentuate the positive, yes. I need the negative and latch on to the affirmative. Don't mess with Mr. In Between.
No, don't mess with Mr. In Between.
Johnny Mercer and Accentuate the Positive on KUWS.
I have this in from Washington. A posthumous presentation of the Medal for Merit will be given to the late Al Jolson's wife, the star of stage, screen, and radio, who appeared in the first full-length feature talking picture in 1927 and is known for Tootsie, will be given by Secretary of Defense George Marshall. Mr. Jolson performed in battle zones to entertain the troops during the Second World War, Jack.
I think I'll be getting a medal myself tonight.
You don't mean...
You mean to tell me...
I can stand a lot of things, but I don't think I can take Jack being a hero.
That's right. Husky has been located.
Oh, such great news.
How did you find him?
Would you stop that?
Husky was a guard dog for the who?
The Coast Guard, of course.
So I called the Coast Guard station in Duluth, and voila! Husky's been hanging out there for a couple of days.
All right. He'll be inseparable now.
Stay tuned for Cavalcade of America, ladies and gentlemen, Baby Snooks, and You Bet Your Life. We'll be back, same time, same place on the old radio dial, the good Lord willing, and I'm not away in Washington getting an award from the Coast Guard. For Lou Martin and Harriet Farrig, then, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
I have to admit, that was good thinking.
Maybe Jack thinks like a dog.
You see, I speak their language.
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Harriet Farrig is played by Jennifer Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.